We rode out through a stretch of pines just off the trail. I kept Bone riding beside me, every once in a while poking him in the ribs or cracking him on the knee with the hammer handle. I was glad I didn't kill him. He wasn't worth it. But I had to pick at him, the way a yard dog has to pick at a hurt rattlesnake. "So what brings you this way, Mr. Bone?" I tapped the handle against his ear.
"Hey, you won't believe me, but I came looking for y'all as soon as I heard you stole all them horses. I felt bad about what I'd done. Even worse now, knowing Kermit let you down. I'm shamed."
"Well, don't be shamed. Jack was only teasing you."
"Teasing? Well, that ain't a thing to tease about. That boy is the light of my life."
"Shut up, Bone. And why don't you leave this imbecile alone? We need to concentrate on the Pope gang."
"You worried about the Popes?"
"Certainly. Anybody with any sense would be."
"Not me."
"My point exactly."
"Hold it. What's that smell? That sound?"
We stopped for a second, then crept ghost-like around the turn of a clearing and froze, unprepared for the grisly scene before us. The flies whipped and swarmed around the body strung from low tree limbs. Shoulders, civilians, women and children, their swollen, dismembered corpses decorated the clearing like a stage show from hell.
"Holy mother of..."
In the center of the clearing, I saw the head of Major Leonard C. Trapp, 11th Cavalry, scalped and jammed down on a thick tree branch that stuck from the ground. His eyes were gone, the sockets filled with flies, and he seemed to be crying white tears as maggots spilled down his cheeks. Thin branches fluttered on the limb beneath his head. The leaves looked like funny green hands waving at us. I backed my horse quietly, as if afraid to disturb the dead. "It's the worst I've ever seen. What kind of people would do something like that?"
"The kind you're prepared to deliver rifles to."
Jack sat silent as stone, his hand working back and forth slowly on the stock of his rifle. Ben Bone leaned and swatted flies from his boot.
"It's Standing Bear's bunch. They did it to show what the army done last year at Sand Creek, except that was Injuns. These are whites."
What should we do? Should we bury them?"
"Burn them. Burn them all."
"Jack, we can't risk a fire. The smoke..."
"Then forget them. Let the earth claim them, and forget how they died."
I watched as Jack rode away, and I knew what he was thinking right then. He was thinking the same as I, that we should take the money and leave this place of madness, this place where craziness reigned. We should go, right now, leave, run if we had to, but shed ourselves of this place and never look back or think of it again. "Shad, let's find Red Cloud and finish our deal."
"Surely you're not going to bring him rifles. Not after this."
"No. I'm going to give him the horses and the money for the guns, and I'm out of it." The Catahoula cur peeped through the bushes and came up behind us, trotting along with his nose to the ground. I hadn't seen him since the day he rolled flowers over the cliff. His coat shined. His eyes glistened like fire. The next day, we came to a bend in the trail where the earth narrowed around us. Two of Brown Horse's warriors appeared high up in the trees, one on either side, and it felt as if they closed a gate behind us as they waved us in. In another 10 minutes, we came upon the string of horses, and Brown Horse rode up. Bone saw Kermit standing beside the trail and ran to him with his arms spread. Kermit looked ready to turn and run, but Bone threw his arms around him in a bear hug.
"My boy!"
Kermit's eyes bulged. His body turned into a thin sausage squeezed in the middle.
"Where do you find that asshole?"
Brown Horse drew a quick circle in the air and poked his finger in it. "You know Bone?" I watched as Kermit's feet touched the ground and he stepped back. Bone stepped in to hug him again, but Kermit ducked away.
"He sub bad whiskey to Crazy Horse's warriors. Make them bad sick."
"That sounds like him. I brought him as a present. He tried to shoot Red Cloud back when Cloud was wounded."
"Good present."
Brown Horse rode off to the front of the string, watching Bone the way a fox watches a crippled chicken. That evening, we stretched out the string a half mile long and let them graze along through a narrow valley. We'd all been a little quiet and tense since coming upon Trapp's patrol. Even Brown Horse and his braves seemed edgy. I figured they wondered what we were thinking about Standing Bear's gruesome handiwork, maybe wondering if we held it against them. They knew that the slogan, "The only good Indian is a dead Indian," was real popular in the white man's world. I reckon it didn't take much to stir something up. Shad had just turned to ride back to Kermit and Ben Bone when I heard something like a large hornet streak past him. Shad slapped his hand to his neck just as blood spilled down his shirt collar. The next one landed against his horse's neck with a soft thud, and the animal reared high and collapsed beneath him.
Shoshone!
I'd already seen the feathered arrow sticking from the downed horse's ribs. Jumping out of my saddle and over my horse's neck, bulldogging her down and snatching my rifle from the scabbard, I hit the ground, sheltered by my horse. Seven Shoshone stormed down from the woods, spreading out to surround us as I swung my rifle over my horse and pounded out rounds. Behind me, I heard Jack's .44 bark. Kermit and Bone had disappeared. Shad came crawling beside me quickly as rifles tore up the ground behind him. He had his pistol out, firing. The Indians flew from their horses like twigs hit by high wind, and the horses veered and fell beneath our volley of fire. Shad snatched bullets from his belt to reload. I saw Brown Horse's warriors coming to help us, but I knew it'd be over by the time they arrived. The last three Indians came in quick as I dropped my spent rifle and snatched my pistol and rolled up on my knees. Shad gave up reloading, snapped his chamber shut, and put two shots in an Indian on his right. The last one's horse rose into the air before me, going over my head. I fired almost straight up into the leaning rider. His cavalry sword flashed past my head, and his face exploded over me as his horse sailed down to the ground behind me and kept going. Then, as quickly as it had started, it was over. Brown Horse's warriors jolted to a halt, sliding sideways in a spray of dust and rock.
How bad, Shad?
Graze.
Warriors!
Brown Horse threw his fist in the air and brought it down toward us. The Catahoula ran out, sniffed at a bloody head, and lowered down on his front paws. The body seemed to relax. The Catahoula sniffed again and pranced away. Shad looked at me and tried to smile. It was a crazy, dizzy smile. Then I saw the wide spread of blood on his shoulder as he spun limp to the ground. I tried to catch Shad, but fell with him.
Help me, Jack! He shot plumb through!
Now I saw the hole as I rolled him on his back. It had caught him just beneath his collarbone and blew out under his shoulder blade.
I'm fine. I need to get...
Jack and I tore strips of rags and dressed Shad's wounds in a hurry and got him into his saddle. He lay slumped on the horse's neck as we pushed hard toward Tongue River. That's where a band of iron would be waiting with Red Cloud's bunch.
From here, all enemies will be behind us. Take the Buffalo Man to Red Cloud. I will bring horses. My warriors will protect the trail behind us.
He's right, Jack.
Shad needs more help than we can give him here. If he takes a fever, he'll die real quick. I've never seen a big fella go down so hard from a shoulder wound.
I know.
Reckon he ain't as tough as he looks.
Nobody is. Maybe he ain't used to getting shot up every now and then.
You have learned how to stay alive in my country, while many want to see you dead. Now your heart is heavy from what you have seen.
Red Cloud gazed across the low flames as we sat in a small clearing beneath the bend in Tongue River. I reckon there's something about seeing young pup soldiers and women and babies slaughtered that don't set just right. You could say that.
You saw the madman Chief Johnson kill our young ones.
That was just as bad.
And in the war you fought against the government, did you see many die?
Sure, but somehow that was different.
Different when whites kill whites? Different than when Sioux kill whites?
I don't know. I pitched the money on the ground near the low fire. Maybe that's how I am. If it is, I can't help it. All I know is that them dumb settlers didn't come up here to get them and their young'uns butchered like animals. Anyhow, I can't make it set right. More guns mean more killing.
More killing of your people? No guns mean more killing of my people.
Picking up the stack of money, Red Cloud wiped it and held it close to his face, turning it, examining it. He smiled as he ran his fingers across the crisp new bills.
Big Chief in Washington makes pretty pictures on his paper. shows people who are proud, who have done many things. Picture promises to do many more things.
Yeah, it's real fine stuff, and I'd love to have a wagon load of it. But about buying you some rifles...
Red Cloud pitched the money back on the ground before me.
Once I traveled to the Missouri country to look at treaty. It was a big trip. They fed us from on top of a long table, played music to help us eat. Then we traveled to a place where many big animals lay in traps for people to look at.
A zoo.
Zoo. Thank you. In zoo, they showed us a bear from my country. On his trap, they made words to tell people to stay away, but people reached out anyway. One man who had drunk much whiskey reached into the bear's trap. The bear tore his arm from here to here.
Red Cloud clawed his fingers down his arm.
Soldier told me that the bear must be destroyed. I asked why. He said because it hurt business. I did not understand. He said people would stop coming if they feared the bear. I said, why put a bear in a trap? Tell people to come see it. Put words on trap to tell them to stay away. Then kill bear because people do not listen.
What did he say?
What is a smart prick?
It can mean a lot of things. Why?
When he left, that is what he told other soldiers about me.
I watched a trace of smile work at the edge of his lips. I let out a sigh and picked up the money.
I heard Mr. Smith tell you the army would hang you for helping me. And you said, fug 'em. Fug 'em all.
Oh, well that. Well, that means, well, when you have no regard for a person at all, you don't see them or hear them.
It is how the army thinks of my people and how you think of the army.
Mr. Cloud, there ain't many people I'd do this for. I just want you to know...
I trust you because you have much thought inside you. If you told me it was easy for you to do, I would not trust you.
Red Cloud stood up with me and pointed off to the eastern sky.
They live there. I live here. You live between.
I turned and walked to the group of braves gathered around a chunk of venison roasting over a fire. Where's the buffalo man?
He is gone.
Gone?
He went out in hurry. That way.
He pointed south. I reckon a lot of possibilities raced across my mind. He could have decided, after getting shot and grazed with an arrow, that he'd had it with Powder River. He could have decided nothing was worth this and slipped out because he was embarrassed to tell me. But as these possibilities dropped off the edge of thought, I was struck by one solid, heavy conclusion. He'd gone to get the money. The son of a bitch! Daylight slipped over the horizon in a blue-golden haze as we led our horses quietly into the woods and past the rock where we'd buried the money.
They ain't been here yet.
Jack leaned in, examining the rock.
Good. Let's lay right here and shoot their eyes out.
Oh!
We both saw a flash as Shad's rifle butt smacked Jack in the chin. Then the barrel flipped around and jammed into my chest.
What are you fools doing here?
Jack lay cold as a wedge.
You've got some damn nerve, you double-cross...
Shut up!
He poked me with the barrel, reached, flipped my gun from my side holster, and dropped it on the ground.
I thought it would take you at least another day to start after me. You're smarter than you look.
He flipped my pistol from my shoulder holster and dropped it.
I reckon it's true what they say about all you...
Say it.
He started to reach down for my Glades knife. Rifles cocked all around us, and he froze, staring up at my eyes.
Kill them! Send them all straight to hell!
Shut up, Bone.
I stared over Shad's shoulder as the six riflemen stepped closer. The voice was the one I'd heard in Mad Johnson's tent the night I robbed him. He stepped forward and smiled, the smile of a wolf over a downed antelope. Morning light glittered across a gold tooth. The other gunmen spread out surrounding us.
Drop the long arm and let's talk a spare.
Way to go, Shad.
Mad Johnson stepped into the clearing. His hat was missing, and he looked like a man with a lot on his mind.
Thank God. That's him, Parker, the one who stole it.
I noticed Johnson's holster was empty and the flap turned up. Jack stirred behind me.
He's got a hog gutter in his boot. Watch him.
Get his gun, Bone, and shut your mouth.
Two gunmen stepped up to Shad. One held a rifle in his face, while the other stepped around, drew his hands behind him, and tied him. Shad winced from his shoulder wound.
I hope it hurts.
You're the one who shot my brother, Jip?
Parker Pope's eyes honed in on me. I figured I was gonna die real soon.
Yeah.
I shot him in the back, kicked his face in, cut his head off. I even said some things about his mama.
Kill him!
I lack a sense of humor.
Son of a bitch.
Jack started to wake in a state. Jack didn't have nothing to do with it. He wasn't even there.
I don't give a damn about my brother. I didn't even like him. I owed him $40. I'm glad he's dead.
I liked him right well.
That's my brother Clement. They were close.
Wake up and smell the morning.
Who the hell are you? Where's my damn gun? Who hit me?
It's the Pope gang, Jack. Go easy.
I don't give a blue damn who it is. There was no call to crack me in my damn jaw.
Who are you? You look familiar.
Well, I ain't. And don't ask me nothing, Pope. My jaw hurts.
I like your style. I think I'll shoot you first.
Well, fire away, you gold-toothed son of a bitch. I'm the only one who knows where the money is. So there.
Jack, they were watching. They know it's under the rock.
Ha! Just raise that old rock and check her out, by God.
That pretty much confirmed that Jack had lost his mind.
You're bluffing. And instead of shooting you, I'm gonna skin you real slow.
Yeah? Give me 2 minutes, man to man. I'll teach you to bust my jaw.
Jack, he didn't hit you.
Shut up. Johnson, roll that rock over, and you better pray it's there.
Johnson took a grip under the edge of the rock. Until it finally pulled loose and flopped over with a thud.
There it is.
Johnson snatched it up. I thought it looked too flat, even after lying under the rock. His face turned chalk white. His lips trembled.
It's empty.
Surprise, surprise. You bastards call yourselves outlaws.
Pope spun toward Johnson with his rifle.
Tough break, soldier.
No! Please!
Don't fire that shot!
Too late. Johnson's head snapped as a long red ribbon curled out the back of it and exploded in the air. Shad jerked beside me as Johnson fell at his feet.
So, now, where do we start?
Pope swung the gun toward Bone. Bone's face turned the color of death after a long illness.
Oh, it's around here. It is. This is where I found him, right here, down on the road.
His eyes rolled back in his head. His body bucked and quivered, and he fell to the ground, passed out cold.
You're disgusting.
Pope swung the gun around on Jack.
What's your deal? I know you've got one.
I had a bust you in your head. Here's how it plays, short and sweet. You turn us loose and give us half the money.
Pope's gunman had stepped in close around. Pope moved his rifle an inch from Jack's nose.
You're crazy, and I ain't gonna dicker with you.
Fair enough. Fire away. You don't need the money.
I saw Pope's hand tighten on the trigger. I started to jump against him, but a gunman held me back.
Bang!
Everybody flinched, except Jack.
You boys ain't tough. You've been tickling your nuts up here in the high country. Now pull that old trigger like you got some guts.
Pope's gold tooth gleamed. He glanced at his gunman, then back to Jack.
A third, and that's my only offer.
All right.
You boys have spunk. Where are you from?
We're from the hard end of Missouri. We've been sightseeing up here in Red Cloud's country.
Sightseeing? Now that's good. Now let's chuck up that money and get on down the road. Where's that, old buddy?
Oh, right behind you, inside that stump.
Get it, Clement.
Pope shot Jack a hard stare. I saw his gun hand tighten again.
So long, sport. It's been fun talking.
It ain't here.
Pope looked confused. Again his gun hand loosened. His expression softened.
You ain't playing with school kids here, Pope. Sooner you settle down, the sooner you'll get your money.
Jack couldn't have hidden the money over a few yards away during the time I spent struggling with Shad and trying to shoot Bone. But we'd been working our way up the wooded slope nearly 10 minutes, and Jack showed no sign of letting up. The three men following us had all our handguns shoved down in their belts. Except for the .44 I had hidden under my shirt. Pope still had Shad tied up back in the clearing. I was waiting for Jack to make a move. When Jack glanced over his shoulder at the gunman, I knew he was judging distance, so I braced, ready. He stopped, turned suddenly.
Right here, boys.
He buried the toe of his boot in one gunman's crotch as I grabbed the other's rifle by the barrel and pulled him toward me. He came forward off balance. Jack stepped in with a straight punch. The man flipped backward, rolled down the slope a few feet, and landed against the tree like he was taking a nap. Then all hell broke loose down in the clearing we had just left.
See? I told him not to fire that shot. Every damn time you pull a trigger.
Jack jerked his gun and mine from one gunman's belt as I slipped over to the tree and did the same with the other.
Reckon it's Shoshone?
Why not? The way things have been running, it wouldn't surprise me if it was Chinamen riding camels.
In a few minutes, we could tell the fight had turned into a mounted chase. We took the gunman's boots and ran them off into the woods, then slipped back down to the clearing. The Popes had put up a good fight, but the odds must have been stacked high against them. Three gunmen lay stretched out with their bodies shot to pieces. Seven dead Indians dotted the path up from the trail. We looked around for horses. There were none. Jack walked over to the log he had sat on earlier, bent down, rolled it a turn, and hefted up the saddlebags of money.
Help me put it under the rock.
He threw the bag on the ground beneath the rock. The terrible wailing was coming from the edge of the woods.
What's that?
Check it out. I'll finish up here.
Oh, don't kill me. Don't kill me, whoever you are.
I recognized Bone sobbing as I stepped in the brush. He looked up, his face streaked with tears, his eyes dilated and shiny. He was scared out of his wits.
I love every damn body. Indians, whites, big colored fellers.
Shut up, Bone.
I pulled him to his feet. I smelled a rank odor and realized he'd soiled himself.
You're too low to live and too pitiful to kill. Get out of here.
I pointed my gun at his face, and he scrambled out through the woods, leaving a vapor of stink like a kicked skunk. Jack patted the rock as I walked back. I took out some carrying around money in case we need it. I don't see Shod nowhere. Maybe he managed to crawl away. I glanced around the clearing one more time. Then we headed down to the trail and started our walk back up to Tongue River. To avoid the many people who roamed the country wanting to kill us, we stayed just off the trail and hiked along through brush and timber for the rest of the day, then slept a few hours in a clump of pines. After midnight, we got up, pushed on, planning to travel only at night, now that we'd distanced ourselves from the scene of the battle. We just climbed a dark ridge and started around it, when we noticed the glow of a low fire in the valley to our right. A camp meant horses. Indian, outlaw, army, it didn't matter what kind, as long as they had four legs and wouldn't nicker too loud when we led them away. We belly crawled closer and gazed down the last 50 feet at four Shoshone braves sprawled around the fire. 20 feet to their left, I saw a tall swish in the pale moonlight, heard solid thud of a hoof scrape the ground. To the right, the guard sat nodding over his rifle barrel. Before him, I saw two of Pope's men, what was left of them, and Big Shod, hanging in the air from a low branch, his wrists bound by a rawhide. In the flicker of firelight, I saw they'd worked on his chest a little with skinning knives, probably just enough to make him scream. They must have saved the rest of him till morning. Pope's men were dead, most of their skin hanging in long strips and one's belly spilling down his legs.
Reckon you'll miss your chance at ever kicking his ass.
Serves him right. He had a chance at doing right by us. So now, to hell with him.
That's right. Piss on him. Just because he stopped flowers from opening your head with a .44.
Damn it. You'll have to help me get him on a horse.
Reaching down, I slipped my Glades knife from my boot.
As soon as we get him out, he's on his own.
Jack nudged me and crept away to the horses. I crawled slow and easy toward the guard. 10 feet from the edge of the firelight, I spotted another guard leaning against a tree with a rifle across his lap and a bottle of whiskey between his legs. He wore a stained army tunic with the sleeves ripped off at the shoulders. Crawling closer, I saw he was passed out drunk, and I eased the rifle from his lap and clubbed him one solid lick on the head. Jack slipped in and crouched in the center of the small clearing, covering the sleeping braves with his rifle, but he wouldn't fire unless he had to.
He watched me go from one to the other until my hands and chest were red with their blood. We called it a Missouri sunrise back during the war. I'd learned it well. I cut Shad down from the tree as Jack gathered the horses and walked them over as silent as a ghost. One of the horses bore a cavalry brand. It was probably Mad Johnson's. Carefully, we raised Shad into the saddle.
Don't.
I put my hand over his bruised and swollen mouth.
Lay still, it's us. You're the only one that gets to ride in a saddle, you rotten son of a...
Slow and easy.
We walked the horses out of the camp a nearly half mile before we slipped up their bare backs and rode off down the edge of the trail. By daylight, we stopped along a creek and eased Shad down from the horse. We rested most of the day, letting Shad get back some of his strength before heading the rest of the way to Red Cloud's farm. That evening, a column of horses approached us on the trail below, and I lay beside Jack peeping over the edge of a ridge. What do you make of it? Staring down at two Pawnee and a big man in full buckskins. Right behind them, four cavalry officers cantered along in full dress uniform carrying a flag. Behind them rode eight soldiers in a column of twos. They all wore a white strip of cloth tied around their arms.
Suppose we're on some kind of military picnic?
If they are, they've more to worry about than ants.
Class can eat them for breakfast and use those white rags for napkins.
Good. Maybe it'll take his mind off the rifles for a while. My mind's still worried about whether to get those rifles. We slipped along with them until we reached the stretch of land below Tongue River.
I must be riding all the way into Red Cloud's camp. Reckon they ought to be told?
There's 16 years worth of West Point bobbing under them fancy hats. If you think you can tell them anything, feel free.
When they stopped at a creek for the evening, we lay in the woods and watched them carve a chunk of dried shank and stake it over a fire. Soon the smell of sizzling meat caused our bellies to growl. Even Shad raised his head and sniffed at it.
They're probably a half-decent bunch if we gave them a chance. I don't see any I recognize. Do you?
I don't recognize any of their horses, if that's what you're asking.
As they carved off thick slices onto metal plates, the old man in buckskins picked up a pot of coffee and walked to the edge of the clearing. Looking up in our direction, he flipped open the lid and steam bellowed.
We got enough for the three of you. We might have something to treat the big fella's wounds.
How the hell?
I don't know, but I'm too hungry to give a damn. I'm coming down.
We eased our horses down through the woods. At the edge of the camp, the Pawnee let Shad down from his saddle and jabbered about the cuts on his chest like craftsmen comparing their work. The man in buckskin smiled, turned, and walked back to the fire. We followed the wake of fresh coffee like sailors sniffing a whore. Around the fire, the officers stood up and dabbed at their mouths with cloth napkins.
Please join us, gentlemen.
The colonel gave us a wave of his perfect hand. His words were too smooth to grab. He had the smile of Jesus, protected by a fire-red mustache and a dangerously sharp goatee.
I'm Colonel Richard Hunt McDowell.
Thanks. Staring at the meat on the fire, I wiped my hands up and down on my dark-stained shirt. It had dried the color of cheap wine. I'm Beatty. James Beatty. This is Mr. I glanced beside me and saw only an empty space where Jack should have been. I turned toward the fire and saw him tear off a strip of meat and shove it in his mouth.
Pleased. We're traveling up to the Tongue River Reservation to visit Chief Red Cloud.
Reservation?
Simply a figure of speech. But come, you must be hungry. Replenish yourself while my colleagues and I finish our discussion. We can chat later.
I stepped over beside Jack. Tearing off a strip of meat, I glanced over my shoulder, then back to Jack.
I reckon Red Cloud's gonna love talking to this butter-tongued son of a bitch.
The old man in buckskins came up to us.
What gave you away was traveling upwind from us.
I sniffed at my shirt, shrugged, and kept on eating.
No way. Nobody's that good.
I'm Bridger. Jim Bridger. If you ain't heard of me, you must have been living under a rock.
I wiped my free hand and held it out.
I sure have, Mr. Bridger. It's an honor.
He looked me up and down.
Oh, yeah.
Bridger searched himself quickly,
pulled out a short string of wooden beads and dropped them in my hand.
That's Shoshone cuttings on that dark fella, ain't it?
Jesus, you can tell just by looking.
No, don't be stupid. We seen them doing it night before last, coming up off the trail. They'd already skinned two others, gutted one.
Then why didn't you stop them? They're working for the army.
Had no time. We're on a mission of peace here.
I was starting to see that whatever Jim Bridger once had must have been left out too long in the thin air of the high country. Well, that's important, too.
You're right it is. I'm the only man Red Cloud will listen to, riding or walking. We're like brothers. Here's a picture.
I looked at the picture. It was Bridger alone.
We were going to have it taken together, but he couldn't make it that day. I went ahead anyway, just for a keepsake.
Meet my friend, Mr. Smith.
Smith, huh? I knew a head splitter Smith up along the Canadian. Lived with a she-bear. Oh, they say him and that bear...
No, Ken. Now listen real close, Mr. Bridger. I don't want you talking to me, asking or telling. I don't want you looking toward me, past me, or anywhere near me. You don't know any of my kin, or any kin of any kin of my kin. In short, don't mess with me. Are we clear?
The Smith I knew was just like that. Contrariest man you ever seen, riding or walking. They say a bull buffalo gored him.
The army must have known they were losing. Sending in Jim Bridger was truly an act of desperation. Bridger had been a hell of a man in his time, legendary. But it was plain to see that his time was slipping fast. His brain had spent too many nights nestled on cold stones high up in the Rockies. How could the army have missed seeing it? Or did they? Maybe it was their way of showing Red Cloud his time was over. Same as blanket Jim Bridger's.
A truly wonderful old gentleman. He's a virtual textbook on Sioux protocol. And they love him. They simply do.
I think he's suffering from a split in his main timbre, Colonel McDowell.
Oh? You mean to imply he has said something to give you the impression... Oh, my.
He's nuts, Colonel. There, I said it. You and the rest of the army are bound to have seen it, unless you're all as crazy as he is.
Are you a veteran, Mr. Beatty?
Near us, Jack, Shod, and the officers snored softly while Bridger and the scouts worked the ridgeline, keeping watch. Moonlight spilled like a vapor of medication on the quiet of night. That is correct.
With whom did you serve? McClellan? Sherman? Grant?
Actually...
Oh, pardon me. The accent. I should have known. Let's see. Lee? Jackson. Of course. That's who it was, wasn't it? Old Stonewall.
Well, the thing is, I actually...
Come, Mr. Beatty. You can be proud to have served with any of those fine southern gentlemen. The war's over, and you have nothing to be ashamed of. Unless, of course, you rode with that despicable band of lawless trash along the border. In which case, you should have been hanged, like many of them were, and all of them should have been. And in which case, you most certainly would not dare question the competence of a decent human being like Jim Bridger, or the decision of an educated, skilled spokesman, trained military professional in their attempt to establish peace with a group of heartless, murdering savages. Am I correct?
His perfect teeth flashed less than a foot from my face. His breath smelled like Washington, cherry blossoms and stale air. You're smooth. And you're right. I shouldn't have said a word, but as I recall, that rebel trash along the border armed and outfitted themselves with the guns and horses of dead Yankees and never stopped kicking ass.
That would be quite enough. Thank you, Mr. Beatty. If there's a point to...
The point's this. If you think that border trash was a handful, you ain't gonna believe how hard Red Cloud is gonna jar your faith. Even daylight seemed to jump up quickly as our stately group rode by. I'd never seen a flag as large or as bright in color as the one that led us into Red Cloud's country. It bellowed and rolled in a flurry of stars and stripes as wind licked it, and it slapped and pushed at the officer carrying it, sometimes ready to knock him off his horse. But he held on. I couldn't help but wonder if they should be waving a large white flag and wearing a red, white, and blue cloth around their arms.
But after last night's conversation with Colonel McDowell, I wasn't about to mention it. We swung up off the trail and met the Pawnee at the edge of a cliff overlooking a stretch of flatland Jack and I had led shot across two nights before. One of the Pawnee rose from his belly and rested on his haunches. We slid from our horses and approached him in a crouch.
Riders, white men.
He pointed at a thin line of dust on the distant horizon. Bridger studied the dust like a hawk.
Yep, yeah, that'd be the ones tracking you and your party. I'll make it a half dozen. The Pope's more than likely.
There was a difference in Bridger now that we'd gotten away from Jack and the army officers. Out here, we were in his world, and he knew his world well enough to stay alive when most around him had long since fallen.
How do you know we were being followed?
Some things a body just knows from being part of this country. We caught wind of you fellas while you thought you were slipping along beside us. Ain't bad for a crazy old feller, is it?
I said some things last night that I shouldn't have. I didn't know you were listening.
I always am riding or walking.
He picked a tick off his shirt sleeve, examined it, then flipped it away.
From the color of that tick, I'd say winter's coming early this year.
What about that bunch following us? If they find us, I don't figure your brass Yankees will be much help.
The Popes couldn't find their ass with both hands. But you're right about McDowell's bunch. They'd be dead in 2 days out here on their own, riding or walking. That's what keeps me and the Pawns here in beans and biscuits.
Beside him, the Pawnee scouts laughed and nodded. I studied the wake of dust.
If you don't mind my asking, why's a man like you leading these sorry bastards to Red Cloud? From what I've seen, it's a waste of time. He ain't gonna give an inch.
I know that. Red Cloud knows it too. This is my last chance to see some of my old friends at the Army's expense. Once the railroad's finished, all the fun will be over. Yep.
I mentioned my talk with Bridger to Jack.
See? That's why I don't fool with the old fart. He was there and has seen it all. Probably right about most of it, but who gives a blue damn? I'm sightseeing.
Well, if the Popes catch up to us, you'll see a sight.
Oh, we've got them by the short hair as long as we've got their money.
It's the government's money.
Well, look who's awake and preaching. You didn't care whose money it was when you tried to beat us out of it, Shad.
Jack unhooked his canteen and handed it to Shad.
Thanks, both of you, for getting me out of there.
Don't thank me. I wanted to stay and watch him gut you.
What's wrong with you anyway? I never figured you for a double cross.
I don't know. Must have lost my head thinking about the money. You don't know what that money means to me.
You can save your sad song. Right now, we've got the Pope gang 2 hours behind us and some pissed off Shoshone wondering who killed their cousins. But as soon as you're able to travel, you can go explain it all to them.
At the front of the column, I reined up beside McDowell and Bridger.
Mr. Bridger tells me we'll be heading into Red Cloud's camp by evening. Perhaps you would like to ride in with Mr. Bridger and announce our arrival. I think it would show well, since you obviously share some sort of commerce with the Indians.
I glanced at Bridger. He rolled his eyes.
Sure, I'm glad to help. By the way, what have you decided since we talked?
Oh, I agree with you completely. I think we have no interest here to substantiate our efforts. I can only recommend a complete and total withdrawal of our forces and a well-intended reconciliation attempt between the Bureau of Indian Affairs, the Secretary of the Army, and, of course, the Commander-in-Chief. Satisfied?
I think so. If you just said you're going to get the hell out of here, then try to make peace.
You're very astute.
Well, if that's the case, why are you even going? Why not just get out, then send someone in after tempers have cooled?
I feel this is the appropriate time to make Chief Red Cloud aware of his options.
His options? You just said...
Indeed. And I mean it. We should withdraw. But in all fairness to the Sioux Nation, I feel we should offer some compensatory options to show good faith. We need to make recompense...
Colonel, can you say anything at all that I can understand? No offense, but I get a headache trying to listen to you.
We need to set up a system whereby this sort of situation doesn't happen again. We need to make it clear to both sides where the boundaries of Red Cloud's country begin and end. I'm afraid our people simply haven't understood.
Well, for one thing, you could have the government quit printing them stupid leaflets telling everybody to come up here, and not mentioning the fact that they're trespassing.
Many moons have come and gone since I've seen my brother Red Cloud, and my heart has been troubled, for I have missed my friends, the Bad Faces.
Red Cloud took me by the shirt sleeve and pulled me to the side. He tossed a hand over his shoulder toward Bridger, who still sat on his horse and rambled on.
Why do you bring him here? He was once a friend of the Sioux. Now he works for the army.
I don't know nothing about his politics. He said you and him were like brothers. He's here on a peace mission. They're about 6 miles back waiting to see if you'll talk. Did I do the wrong thing? They were coming anyway.
I know they come. We see them for a long time. See you with them. But Bridger, he gets...
Red Cloud ran his hand down his face trying to find the word. His eyes asked me for help. Red. Sunburn? Embarrassing.
Ah, thank you. He tries to act like he knows everybody. He has been doing it for years. That is why somebody has not cut off his head.
I didn't know Mr. Cloud, or I wouldn't have rode in with him. If you like, I'll go back and tell him to leave.
I will meet with him. We are out of coffee. Did they bring coffee?
Well, I'm sure. They never travel without it.
Good. Where are my guns?
Well, now, we need to talk about that. See, we've had some problems with the Pope gang.
And the Shoshone.
He pointed at my Indian pony.
And the Bluecoats.
He pointed off to the string of horses grazing near the creek, the ones we'd stolen back from Fetterman. Well, you just wouldn't believe the trouble we've had.
It's good your enemies and mine are the same. You gave your word. You will get us guns. Now, I will get ready for talk. I will put on suit and soft rope that goes around my neck. I will wear the medal that shows the last time the Great White Chief broke his word. Go and tell them. Do not come unless they bring coffee.
Bridger worked his way over to Red Cloud and me.
Excuse me, Chief. I know you remember me. Bridger? Jim Bridger? Blanket Jim Bridger?
I do. You brought in many blankets to my people. Some of them carried the Great Sickness.
So that's where you got the name Blanket.
I never said I was no doctor. I was in it for the money. If they was diseased, I didn't know it. Either way, they were damn pretty, weren't they? They call me Blanket because I live in the wild, same as them, riding or walking.
Red Cloud turned from him to me.
Go and bring in the peace soldier. We will drink coffee. We will talk of blankets, money, beads, and broken saddles. If he preaches, I will not pray. If he gives me something, I will not take it. I will say no.
Red Cloud leaned close to my ear.
Fuck 'em. Fuck 'em all.
On the way back to McDowell's camp, we swung wide off the trail and circled atop a high ledge overlooking Tongue Valley.
I thought we best sidetrack and keep an eye on the riders we saw the other day. I don't reckon they'd chance riding this close to Red Cloud's village, but it sure would look bad on me if we got snuck up on.
I watched him scan the valley like a creature of prey. I couldn't believe how different he acted out in the wilds. Here was a master of his surroundings. Anywhere else, he struck me as a simple-minded old fool. I'd grown up on stories of people like Blanket Jim Bridger and Medicine Calf Beckworth. It was hard for me to let go of the legend and see him as an old man who just about played out his string. We'd seen no sign of the riders and headed back to meet McDowell.
No, don't believe that story about the disease blankets, for I wouldn't do no such a thing, riding or walking.
I hope not. I can't think of anybody lower than a man who'd spread smallpox on a whole race of people, especially if he was supposed to be their friend.
Yeah, but you gotta admit, it would be a pretty smart trick.
I think it's cowardly and evil.
No, back east it might be. Up here anything goes. This land belongs to the strongest and the boldest. The meek inherit it, but they get it right in their face, shovel full at a time.
Riding in ahead of Bridger, I stopped in a clearing off the trail where McDowell sat on a canvas folding stool reading the Bible.
The rest of the troops milled about near the edge of the clearing while Jack sat dabbing a wet rag on Shad's back farther away. Jack dropped the rag on Shad's shoulder and walked over as I stopped in front of McDowell.
I didn't expect you back so soon.
I don't think it was a wise idea to bring along Bridger, Colonel. Most of the Sioux ain't real happy about him working for the Army.
You're forever the pessimist, aren't you?
Jack walked up and stopped beside me. Red Cloud seems to think Bridger brought in a load of diseased blankets years back.
I heard that story, too. And David Crockett killed a bear when he was only 3 years old. But come now. Do you suppose Bridger would be stupid enough to carry around a load of contaminated blankets? What would have kept him and his men from getting sick?
He's got you there. You ought to know better than to open your mouth around the U.S. Army.
It may interest you both to know there are some of us in the military who are deeply sympathetic to Red Cloud and his people. As I told you, I will be recommending a complete withdrawal of our forces, and I'm sure President Johnson will be in complete agreement.
Last I heard, that rotten bastard's about to get his thieving ass thrown out in the street.
How dare you! You loathsome, despicable...
He stepped forward, his hand slapping the open Bible against his chest. I stepped between them. Easy, Jack.
One more word, soldier boy, and I'll put a bullet twixt your Psalms and Proverbs.
Bridger came sliding to a halt. One of the Pawnee scouts slid in right behind him.
Big trouble coming, Colonel.
Behind him, the troops already started reaching for the hats and rifles.
I spotted Standing Bear and over 100 warriors rounding a turn in the valley.
But we're under a peace symbol. Red Cloud knows we're coming.
Standing Bear don't know it. We better light out of here.
He's right, Colonel. From what I've heard, Standing Bear is real ambitious about running the show. Jack turned and ran to help Shad on his horse. Around us, the soldiers watched anxiously, ready for the command to mount up.
I had planned on arriving with a certain amount of military decorum, but I suppose we'll have to improvise as we go.
Colonel, if we don't get going, we'll arrive on the end of a stick.
Our horses were winded and lathered as we rode into Red Cloud's camp. Dust covered the flag. McDowell and his officers tried to maintain their staunch military bearing, but sweat and dirt ran down their faces, giving them the look of sad clowns. Behind the officers, the troops still glanced back over their shoulders. We'd spotted Standing Bear's braves along the ridgeline 3 different times on our way in. Now it occurred to me as we reined up our tired horses that they were there strictly to frighten us. It was Red Cloud's way of setting the stage for this little get-together. We came in on his terms. His camp became our refuge.
Note the horses and arms. This isn't the ill-equipped band of drifters depicted by last winter's reports from Laramie.
Since Bridger and I left, the herd of horses had been gathered closer, and many were picketed throughout the camp. Battle shields hang from their blankets and saddles, and rifles lay across their backs tied by strips of rawhide. Steam curled from many cooking pots, and the smell of boiling meat filled the air. Red Cloud knew how to decorate the stage. As Brown Horse and Band of Iron greeted us, several young braves took our horses and began watering them from gourd dippers. Behind us, the troopers dismounted and stood beside their horses.
Welcome. We will talk as food is prepared.
2 older women appeared from within a gathering crowd and stepped forward with 3 spotted puppies in their arms. One of them held out a puppy toward McDowell. He patted its head.
Yes, lovely little fella.
Pinch its ribs, Colonel.
Is that some gesture of...
It's our supper. She's asking your approval.
Bridger shot me a guarded smile as McDowell's face turned pasty green.
Actually, I hadn't planned on staying for dinner. I don't want to impose.
It's a little greasy, but it's so tender it'll melt in your mouth. Throw in a little sassafras and wild onion.
Bridger smacked his lips. My stomach tried to hide behind my ribs. I would have given a large part of the money to stay and watch McDowell force his way through dinner. But as he and his officers gathered near Red Cloud's tent, Brown Horse stepped in beside me.
My warriors and I will travel with you for a ways. Standing Bear will not harm you.
Thanks. Will you see to it the Big Shad gets tended to? He can head out on his own when he's healed up some. Band of Iron placed a hand on my shoulder to hold me.
Wait, you cannot leave until Red Cloud speaks to you.
McDowell and the officers turned toward me with a curious look. I smiled.
Pardon me, gents, while I visit my friend Mr. Cloud. McDowell shot me a cautious glance as I stepped toward Red Cloud's teepee.
I hope you realize the importance of this peace mission.
He reached out a hand to my sleeve. I jerked it away. Cloud and I don't talk war and peace. We talk religion and politics. Something you fellers couldn't do without winding up in a fight. Just as I stood up inside the teepee, Red Cloud stepped from the shadow behind the flap. He wore a firm smile.
I stand here and listen. It is good what you said. Now soldiers know I have white friend. And it is good that I am repaying you for saving my life.
Being my friend ain't exactly a plus, Mr. Cloud. I eased down on an elk skin as Red Cloud circled the low flames and perched atop his pile of hides. It seemed higher than I'd ever seen it.
I will say.
A feather lance stuck up beside him, and he wrapped his hand around it as he settled down on the hides. He stuck back his chin as if posing for a picture.
Do I look powerful like the White Chief beside the big river and the bucket of mud?
He'll scare hell out of this bunch if that's what you're asking.
And maybe they will listen.
Red Cloud took a firm grip on the lance. He wore brand new buckskin trousers trimmed in red and black stitching, and a fancy white shirt with a pleated front beneath his breastplate of beads, silver bangles, and tiny feathers. His black hair glistened of grease, pulled straight back and dangling past his shoulders nearly to his waist. A black formal coat lay smoothed out beside him. On top of it lay a shiny beaver skin top hat. Next to it lay a sparkling war axe. Next to it, an ornate pipe and pouch of tobacco. He looked like an ancient warlord sitting on a pile of treasure. Don't count on him, Mr. Cloud. I believe McDowell is an honest man, but he only goes as far as his title can take him. Once it goes past him, his words won't mean spit. Remember what we talked about that night on the ridge? Whatever they're selling, it ain't worth buying.
I had a dream. In the dream, I saw you bring me many rifles. Your heart was troubled because many would die in the moon of the cold. You left holding money in your hand that was covered with the blood.
Whoa, Mr. Cloud. Not to interrupt you, but as soon as I get your rifles from Dirty Jaw, Jack and I are Missouri bound.
Then I have said enough. Sometimes dreams are visions, sometimes only dreams.
I reckon I won't be seeing you again, Mr. Cloud. So I want to tell you, you've been a friend. I hope you and your people fare well in keeping your country. If there was any other way I could help...
Tell your people. Tell them of the Sioux Nation, what it is and what it will always be. Tell them we are horses without bridles, bears without traps. Tell them we will not stand in a line or sit in a corner. Tell them we will never live in the bucket of mud, but will die on the high plains with our women in our arms and our babies on our backs.
His eyes glistened in low flames. I will. I watched as he stood up and put on the black coat and high top hat. He picked up a polished cane and swung it back under his arm.
I have spoke many times to the knight to learn how to speak to the White Chiefs.
Tell them like you just told me, Mr. Cloud. Surely to God someone will hear you. If they don't, it's their loss.
Watch out for the hair on your head as you travel, my country.
Red Cloud took my hand in his. And you watch out for the shirt on your back when you deal with the soldiers.
You suppose McDowell will get Cloud to come to Laramie?
We sat watching Brown Horse and his warriors disappear into the scattered woodlands. 10 feet away, the Catahoula cur sat licking his belly and snapping at flies. The bald-faced gelding had followed us from Red Cloud's farm. I don't know, Jack. Red Cloud is a hard man to figure. But I feel like McDowell's heart is in the right place. If it ain't, I reckon Cloud will see it.
You still don't get the picture up here, do you? McDowell probably has the best intentions in the world. All that does is make him more dangerous than the rest of these government snakes.
Jack, you've got to trust somebody.
It ain't a matter of trust. It's a matter of things being gone too far. There ain't nothing going to settle it here but an all-out slaughter. Anything else anybody tries is just going to make it worse. It's like a runaway wagon with the brakes burnt out. All you can do is jump off or ride it till it crashes.
Nothing like a cheerful attitude.
As soon as Dirty Jaw gets them rifles out of Laramie, I'll turn them over to Brown Horse outside of Crofton and we'll leave.
I don't see why they couldn't do it themselves.
I don't know, but as soon as it's over, we're leaving here with enough cash to stuff a mattress.